Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
So how much do you think about ancient Rome?
Well, I think about ancient Rome all of the time. It's one of the most interesting memes to have hit society recently. Certainly all the people I talk to, because many are Roman historians, are amused and laughing about it. Yeah, they think about it all the time.
And that's it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm kidding, of course. This week, we are going to make an extra episode, which is the first time for this podcast that we're publishing two episodes this week. We published today one episode on the recording on Thursday, an episode about the Euromaidan Revolution, which you absolutely should check out as well. And this week, on Saturday, the time of release on Saturday, while the meme is still fresh, we are going to talk about ancient Rome and why people think so much about ancient Rome. And this is a meme that came out this week, and of course we are going to join the bandwagon and talking about how it came to be. So how did this meme come? You wanted to talk about how this meme came about. So how much do you think about ancient Rome come about?
It's quite interesting because although it's something that everyone's been talking about for the last fortnight, it seems to have kicked off about a year ago. It was started by a Swedish influencer called Saskia Kort in September last year on Instagram. She asked her followers to ask their male partners and friends how often they thought about the Roman Empire. You know, three or four times a month, every couple of days, at least once a day. That was the answer, and it was a kind of brief flurry there for a little while, but it was then picked up in August this year by a Roman reenactor called Gaius Flavius, and it made its way to TikTok. And there the meme exploded. Just before we started recording, I wanted to see how many videos there were to it. And there are 1.2 billion hits.
Holy moly.
To the hashtag an empire on TikTok. It's one of the most popular video memes that we've ever seen.
Indeed, and we are going to talk about this today. And if you're looking up on the bookshelf, on the top shelf, you might see that I do think indeed I look quite a lot about the Roman Empire. And personally, I'm about to finish Plutarch Volume 2, which I much preferred over Volume 1, I must be honest. Today, on the other book, and I'm about to finish another book on the Romans. So I do think I'm quite a lot about the Roman Empire myself. And of course, let's begin with the I want to do a little twist on this. How much did the Romans think about the Roman Empire?
That's a very good question. It was used fairly early on as propaganda. I mean, if you look at, just read the Aeneid. I mean, I always dismiss the Aeneid as Homer fanfic. But there was a lot of kind of political statements within there. And you get a sense of what not just Augustus wanted to talk about the Roman Empire, but what Romans themselves then began to think about it. So this idea that the world was theirs for the taking, that they could rule in different countries around the world, that they could rule different legions. And you start to see it in an awful lot of poetry. You start to talk about the savage Scots, and you start to talk about the Arab countries. They were fairly aware from a fairly early age that this was what they were born to do. You know, the Roman Empire, obviously there was marketing to it. I mean, Imperial marketing, but they were fairly assured that the world was theirs.
And of course, as it's just in most scholarly books today, they don't really use the term Roman Empire. They use the term Res Publica, which they call themselves as well at the time.
Well, I think that encompasses, it helps you encompass a longer period, because, I mean, there wasn't an empire. I mean, I'm talking to you from the UK. There wasn't an empire when Julius Caesar first made it to Britain. By having Res Publica and having it from an earlier state, I think you get a sense of longevity. And space. I mean, if you do think about the Roman Empire, and I mean, jokes aside, many of us who are involved in it in any way spend an awful time thinking about it. This was pre-internet. Communications could take a very, very long time. But the Roman Empire did manage to extend from north of Scotland down to sort of parts of India. That's a long way.
And imagine the distance you must have taken to travel that way if you chose to do so and travel from the north of Scotland in those times, where roads were unsafe. The roads were pretty good in Roman standards, of course, but still it was a dangerous way to travel. If you were chosen to travel, let's say, from North Scotland to the end of the Roman Empire on the other side.
There's also a cultural shock that comes in with it. I spend a lot of time thinking about Roman Scotland. Many of the soldiers and many of the commanders who were here came from North Africa.
Yeah. Mm.
It's something that, as a scholar, you would write without thinking too much about it. But to go from somewhere like Carthage with the climate and the culture and the food, and suddenly you're based in Scotland, where it's rainy, it's not especially sunny, where everyone's hostile, that's a bit of a shock to the system. But where it speaks to the positive nature of how the mechanics of the Roman Empire is, I remember when reports were starting to emerge of Roman latrines in northern Germany, and they found pepper in amongst the residue. Now, think for a moment where that pepper must have come from. The Roman Empire must have had the logistics to go from India to Italy to Germany and then out to the legionary camps. I mean, it wasn't especially luxurious. I mean, it was obviously high end. But it's interesting that the food connections, that the logistics worked. It's so exciting to see that happen.
And it's just got to show how strong the Silk Road were back then as well.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And I want to begin actually with the fall of the Roman Empire, because even after the fall, a lot of men, I mean, I'm not going to talk too long about this, but everyone wanted to become the new Roman Empire. Even the Germans, who spent most of their time fighting the Roman Empire, thought that, hey, the Romans were pretty cool after all. Let's create a holy Roman Empire, which were, according to Voltaire, neither holy nor Roman. And of course, you had the Byzantine Empire in the east, which in my view is very much the true, quote-unquote, Roman Empire, since Constantine in 330, he didn't change capital to Constantinople. But everyone in medieval times wanted to become Roman Empire. So even in medieval era, people didn't think quite a lot about the Roman Empire as well.
I think that's one of the reasons why this meme has taken off quite as much as it has. I mean, there is a it's popular, of course, because it's silly. You've got this conspiracy theory that men have been hiding from women, that they're all obsessed about the Roman Empire. It's fun. And it fits into the world where you have a media which says, you know, 10 things you didn't know about your husband liking the Roman Empire. Number 7 will shock you. I mean, it's that kind of media thing into that is silly. But there's a more serious point to it as well. You talked about the fall of the Roman Empire, and I was thinking about that this week because the meme was echoed in the right wing press in the UK because it panders to the right wing's obsessions with immigration. As I mentioned, this article was specifically linking immigration caused the fall of the Roman Empire, and that was linked to the
not that origin given it didn't.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. But many people do make that case, and that argument was being linked to the difficulties that you saw in Lampedusa and the perennial British and, to an extent, European, Italian debate about immigration and where we should go and how to do it. But there's a more serious point here as well. It's this joke in the Monty Python and the Life of Brian, you know, what have the Romans ever given us? Well, they've given us paved roads, they've given us laws and everything else. But to put that for one side, the Romans did give us that. If you walk into the center
apart
of
apart from that, what else did they give us?
Well, exactly. If you go to the center of almost any European city that I can think of, and many American ones as well, and Australian ones as well, you will see a neoclassical building. It will probably be the town hall or the law courts or something.
I mean, sorry to interrupt you again, but the Washington DC and the capital is very much inspired by Roman architecture as well.
No, you're absolutely right. And because it's in your face every day, it's not a huge surprise that the people are thinking a lot about it. It's everywhere. It's the Roman heritage is in almost every element of daily life.
So let's talk about how a legacy of the Roman Empire. We spoke a little bit about it in architecture, but it's not just a legacy of Christianity, and it probably would have come sooner or later, but it came in the conversion of Constantine, and he legalized, because it wasn't fun to be a Christian in the first 200 years, as we have discussed in the podcast before, I think, but still, with Christianity becoming a huge influence, of course, as we see in the medieval era, and even today, Christianity is a part of the Roman legacy as well.
You can see it sort of very directly in Britain, with Britain's second house, the House of Lords. The House of Commons is where MPs sit. The House of Lords is the upper house. Now, a number of seats there are reserved for bishops. The idea the religious people could have any impact on laws or the running of the country was something very specifically brought about by Theodosius. It hadn't especially happened before. And you have small things like that, small reminders every day that there is a direct connection. There's a direct link back to the Roman era.
And of course, and speaking of legacy, in the Romance languages as well, they are derived from Latin as well. So you see, the Roman Empire is still with us, very much so, to this present day.
Well, you see it most clearly, I think, in Italian, which is very close linguistically to Latin. But then if you start to think about the connections between Italian and Spanish, you realize that some people describe Spanish as the Roman military bastardized Latin, and that's what it's become. And as you said, most European languages, or certainly Southern European languages, have very, very, very strong Roman content.
Romanian even is probably as well one of the closest languages to Latin, as from what I understand.
No, you're absolutely right. Where I think it becomes interesting is in more northern European countries, so from Germany northwards, where you have this mixture of Germanic languages and Latin, and then where you come to English, which is a free-for-all of anything that was left over.
So, of course, media and fiction is one of very popular among, of course, in set in Rome, not set in the Roman Empire, as we see today. And one of the most popular fictional, I do think, is the classic I, Claudius, of course, which tells the story of Claudius and how he, and of course, where Livia is killing everyone. So let's talk about I, Claudius for a second, how this fictional book, of course, impacted the Roman legacy.
It's very appropriate that you raise that question, because it has just started being shown again on British television. I've always been incredibly fond of the series, because it was repeated in the UK when I was about 11 or 12, and sort of studying Latin and history at school, and it was a huge driver to become more involved in the Roman world. But more broadly, that entire type of filming, again, is another legacy. There's almost not a male over the age of 35 who doesn't say, "My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the north, general of the Felix League, and a loyal servant of the true emperor, father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife," and so on. Everybody knows it, and it's become incredibly popular. It's interesting.
Are you not entertained? As well.
Exactly. It's moved beyond something specialist to popular culture. Mm-hmm. And I find it very interesting with I, Claudius, and I've been enjoying the repeats, watching it again, and I've been watching it with my children. But there is another series on at the moment on one of the channels called Domina, which is focused just on the life of Livia. And essentially, they took I, Claudius as a starting point and wanted to look at how did Livia become Livia as we saw her. It's these permanent connections, and they keep evolving, and they keep breeding more and more culture.
And of course, one of the running jokes in Roman media, in media, is of course that the Romans speak English. And of course, since I know you haven't seen the series, but and within the second season of Barbarians wasn't that good, but still, you gotta respect that even though they don't speak British, the Romans there, they actually took the length to speak Latin, or try to some extent to speak Latin with the Romans, even though it may not be entirely correct, because these are actors, not historians, or have a degree with Latin. Still, you got to respect. Finally, we have a series where Romans actually speak Latin and not English or the German, as it is a German series.
There was a brilliant comedy series, very underrated, in the late 80s in the UK called Chelmsford 1-2-3, which was about the Roman invasion of the UK. And the entire first episode was spoken in Latin. When the characters finally land in the UK, they turn to each other and say, "Oh, we're in Britain now. We should speak this ridiculous language called English." And all of the dialogue swaps to English. It's very schoolboy Latin. It's very funny Latin, and there are some good jokes that make sense. If you know English and Latin, the first episode is certainly worth looking out.
Sorry, my camera slipped out for a second. But yeah, another one I want to bring up is, of course, one of my favorite comedians. I'm sure you know who I'm talking about is Eddie Izzard, of course, who does a brilliant bit about Hannibal and how a 30-minute conversation is just like 5 seconds in English. I mean, it's one of my favorite bits that he has done, arguably.
Yeah, I'm again hugely fortunate. I was seeing him live when he did his one of the first times he did his routine about Hannibal going over the Alps, and the lovely bit about, well, has anyone checked that elephants isn't just Latin for skis? It's the late 80s began and early 90s began to see quite a lot of people playing with the idea of Latin as a popular subject. But again, to bring back to the point that we had at the beginning, this is why the meme of the Roman Empire is not remotely surprising. It's with us in popular culture. It's with us in architecture. It's with us in how we built up our societies. It's there all the time. I think almost the bigger question is, why are you not thinking about the Roman Empire?
There was one BBC, I was going to try to find it actually. Let's see if I can play it. I don't know if it copyrights. Maybe not, shouldn't do that because of copyright, but there was a BBC the report, and I don't know if you've seen this on Instagram, where I saw that the guy was did not know even what the Roman Empire was when his girlfriend asked him, and I don't even know what the Roman Empire is. So somebody clearly has not been paying attention in school, I see.
It's an interesting. I hadn't seen that one, and I think it is also worth mentioning some of the problems with this phenomenon, at least acknowledging them, even if we can't do anything about it. That it seems to be a very male obsession, or rather, it's being presented as a very male obsession. I obviously I know lots of very, 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 very talented female classicists, and they're slightly excluded from this. And I think Mary Beard made some comment about this as well. The other problem, which hasn't been acknowledged as much, is it seems to be a very white phenomenon. It's not as inclusive as some of the other memes that have been. It seems to be very targeted at white middle class men. I thought I'd mention that because it should be acknowledged that. These memes, of course, they're funny and of course they're silly, but it's not all encompassing.
And speaking of the Latin language as well, I want to bring that even in, of course, in medieval, and I'm going back to the medieval era, and in court, that Latin was the language they spoke up until early modern ages. Latin, of course, was the language of the court, medieval court, and even, of course, in the Vatican as well, Latin is the language of, you know, the Vatican. So it's not the language is clear, it's still very much with us, even if it is a dead language, quote unquote. We still have new words for it as well that comes in Latin when new discoveries, and I don't know if it is because it's done cooler in Latin, but you know, still it is very much with us to this present day and in the medieval era as well.
Well, you still see the heritage in British law. It may have changed more recently, but certainly 20 years ago, you had to have studied Latin at school before you were allowed to take a law degree. And there is still a presumption in a lot of law that you at least understand Latin terminology. It's never gone away.
And I want to talk, because this episode is not going to be too long, and this is an extra episode that I wanted to publish because of the meme, but let's talk about how, because a lot of people have talked about seem to worship ancient Rome and how they were so civilized, and the architecture, of course, we should to some degree worship ancient Rome for its legacy and its influence that it had on our history with, of course, as I mentioned, architecture, language, and their history, and you know, but we shouldn't really not worship them too much because they were quite brutal. It was not a friendly place to live in ancient Rome. It was dangerous, and of course, if you were poor, even worse to live. Ancient Rome was more or less for the rich, which is mostly who we read about in history, and I think that's one of the reasons why we start worshiping so much as we do, because we never read about the poor, and it was for the poor. It was not kind of miserable to be in the world of ancient Rome.
I agree, but I think one of the reasons it's popular is if you talk to anyone who is fantasizing about it, they are not an infantry man. They're probably commander of a legion. You know, they're not living in one of the blocks of flats in Rome, or one of the more sort of horrible areas of a city. They have a nice Roman villa. And you project yourself back. And I think this goes into any element of historical fantasy. You the life of those of at the bottom of the social scale has always been horrible, and it remains horrible to this day. You never fantasize about being at the bottom. You almost always fantasize about being a commander, an emperor, you know, someone with the ear of the palace, that kind of thing. I don't think this is something that we should go into in too much detail. But I also don't think anybody wants to go back. I mean, I'd be surprised if that many people genuinely wanted to go back. I mean, you'd say to them, okay, well, you can't have your paracetamol, for example. Mm-hmm. Yes, and of course there are other medicines and other ways round, but you could joke and say, well, to anybody under 20, telling them they couldn't have their phone with them, you know, there's no Wi-Fi, I think that would be quite difficult.
It would be a deal breaker, wouldn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
And of course, I'll just talk a little bit about this in earlier on in this episode, but I want to talk a little bit about how people did want to become the Roman Empire after they fall as well. And I mentioned this again earlier in this episode, but you know, as you know, the Holy Roman Empire, it wanted to become Romans. Britain wanted to become Romans. They fancy themselves as being heir to the Roman Empire. The Spaniards wanted to do, and of course, the Byzantines. And even the Ottomans looked at themselves in as the heir of the Roman Empire, they were one of the ones that come closest to recreate the Roman Empire. If you look at the map, I would say that the Ottomans kind of were the ones who came closest to recreating the Roman Empire as a Mediterranean power.
I think a lot of this is a rubber stamp of approval. If you dig into these things in great detail, you know, to what extent, you know, were they really the Roman Empire? I mean, Charlemagne in Europe arguably did it the most, was particularly successful in doing so. But his direct connection to the Roman Empire was fairly sketchy. It was a fairly long time after the Roman Empire had, in inverted commas, fallen. What they were doing and if I describe myself as Roman and if I present myself as Roman, that's the authority that I need to take over this city, take over this country, take over do whatever it is that you want to do. Mm-hmm. And you can see some countries still sort of going along these lines, this idea of historically this belonged to my country.
Yeah.
Therefore, that's given me a rubber stamp to send the army in.
And of course, if you're going to go that way, that means that Italy has claimed to half of Europe, North Africa and Britain. So I don't know how legitimate that claim really is today, if you look at it that way.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good point. It's. I think everybody wants, every government wants authority to go and do something, and this has given them authority to go and do it. Again, this comes up semi-regularly, again, in the more right-wing corners of the British press, whenever slavery reparations come up. You can almost count down before somebody has written to one of the papers and says, in which case I want reparations from Italy for the Roman Empire. I mean, they try and take that argument to what they see as the most absurd example.
And I wanted to end with one thing, because one thing we haven't discussed is the Italians after the fall of the Roman Empire, because they did not seem to think too much about the Roman Empire after as well. They were kind of, we've been there, done that, we don't need it anymore. Of course, up until the Renaissance era, but still, they did not seem to think too much about trying to recreate or reunify Italy, as it would not be reunified until Garibaldi, of course. But still, they did not seem to think too much about the Roman Empire.
I think you've put your finger on it exactly, that there was no unified country. The splintering of Italy was so complete that there was no real authority for them to do so. You see an element of that under the papal states afterwards, but it didn't really happen. In Europe, I mean, as you said, the Holy Roman Empire took over. And if you want to see a successful sort of European counterpart to the Ottoman Empire, I think the Habsburg Empire in Austria probably has claim to it. And certainly they tried to claim it itself. You know, much of the imagery we know, you know, simply of the eagles and the architecture, as we've already discussed.
And there was one more thing I wanted to add with Italy, and that is, of course, Mussolini. But I think this fairly misconception. He didn't. I mean, he of course did not have the power to do so, and he would not, even if he tried, it would not have been successfully. But I do not think that he. People said, oh, he wanted to recreate the Roman Empire for himself. But that was, I don't think that's a fairly common misconception about Mussolini, but that was not really his intention to do so.
It was very much, he took the trappings, he took the bits of the Roman Empire that appealed to him, in the same way that other fascist states have, Nazi Germany, for example, they picked the bits of the Roman Empire that they think works with the message that they try to send to their people.
Of course, as we discussed in our previous episode about the Teutoburg first, Hermann or Arminius became very much part of the Nazi propaganda, how he was, you know, defying the Italians, and how he became kind of a hero in Nazi propaganda.
He did, but the point to make here, which I find fascinating, is that there was no unified Nazi propaganda. So they used Arminius when it was useful for them to do so, but they also used Roman elements when it was useful to do that. There was a terrifying pragmatism to what they were trying to do.
And I think we're going to round it up there. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I want to say that the Roman Empire will not, most likely never go away. And it hasn't gone away. And even after its fall in the medieval era, it still hasn't gone away. And it's still with us. And the legacy of the Roman Empire will always be there, in, like you said, talked about very much in this episode. But before you go, do you have anything you want to promote, any social media? Thank you so much for coming back on. It's been a pleasure to do this with you. Do you have anything, any social media or anything you think you want me to put in the description of this episode?
No, just thank you very much for having me on the show again.
My name is Alan. This has been Valdatish. Well, you can find us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you can find podcasts these days. If you are on Apple Podcasts, consider writing a review of our podcast that can help us out a lot. If you are on Spotify, give us 5 stars. And I hope you enjoyed this extra episode. This is the first time we've done this. Possibly if I still find something intriguing that becomes popular in popular culture that I want to call a bit history, that is history related, I might do something like this again. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please like, share, and subscribe. And I'll see you next time.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.